Hello, I'm Marcy Zwaycaft. This is number 0583, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0583. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we remember the phenomenal actress Conchita Farrell, who recently passed away. She was best known for playing Berta on Two and a Half Men.
You know, they asked me for an Eastern European accent, and I thought, well, you know, I do a fairly decent Russian accent. I worked it, and then I worked it in my own voice, and I went, I'm going to ask if I can do it twice, because I do it better in my own voice. So when I went in, I said, I know you're looking for an ethnic kind of a approach to this role, and I said, but, you know, I come with my own ethnicity, and I think that this works better in Trailer Park. And they laughed and said, whatever makes you happy.
Scream queen Dee Wallace, one of our favorite guests, who manages to stay busy during the quarantine, she's created her own horror film with a few famous friends called Stay Home.
I just was sitting here in my office one day and I went, all right, what can I create? And I came up with this idea for this short film, and I took it to my daughter, and she and her friend ran with it and wrote a great script. And four of my horror icons and I got together. We each did it in our own homes, way far away from each other. Yeah, I just wanted to give back to the fans and stay connected during this crazy time.
Mark Hartzman from WeirdHistorian.com on how Thomas Edison wanted to talk to the dead.
So when he announced this, he made this announcement in October of 1920, and his thought was, you know, first of all, there was, I think, some excitement around the announcement that he would do this. I love the headline from one of the newspapers that says, Edison at work on machine to talk with dead. Inventor hopes to perfect his apparatus within a few months. Believes idea will be success. Methods commonly used. Unscientific nonsense, wizard says. And so when people are reading this, they're thinking like, well, if this guy could make a phonograph, you know, maybe he could make a telephone to the afterlife too.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0583, was Marcy Zwaycaft, who is a financial services representative. She just got promoted in her job. You go, girl. You got this. Well earned, upward and onward. You're happy. Your little punker hunk is happy. B. Arthur is smiling down on you. All is right with the world. Thank you very much, Marcy, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? And we have a few less Stuff File news stories to share with you this time around, because I want to get to the segment where we honor Conchita. It's a little longer than usual, so here we go. An investigation found four inmates were subjected to inhuman discipline at the Oklahoma County, Oklahoma jail. Detention officers Gregory Butler Jr. and Christian Miles, both 21, were charged with cruelty to a prisoner and conspiracy, both misdemeanors, along with their supervisor, 50-year-old Lieutenant Christopher Hendershot. Said District Attorney David Prater, it was unfortunate that I could not find a felony statute to fit this fact scenario. I would have preferred filing a felony on this behavior. According to the charges, inmates were forced to stand, handcuffed, and secured to the wall in a closed room while this played at high volume on repeat. Oh, the horror. Yes, that infernal children's song that seems to be the ultimate kryptonite to anyone over 30 who's not on meth.
Shark, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, Grandma Shark, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, Grandma Shark.
Henderson retired from the department, and the other two officers were fired.
Grandpa Shark.
How they weren't brought up in front of the Geneva Convention on War Crimes is beyond me. And finally, here's our truly wacky update to a story we shared about 2 years ago on this program. On October 14th, 32-year-old Amethyst Realm of Bristol, England, announced on British morning television that her planned wedding to Ray, a ghost that she met in Australia 2 years ago, was off because he kept disappearing and started hanging around with a sketchy spirit group while they were on vacation in Thailand. He'd disappear for long periods of time. When he did come back, he'd bring other spirits to the house, and they'd just stay around for days, Realm said. She said the decision not to marry was mutual. He just completely changed. Wow. So, basically, she finally saw through him? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first segment on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Recently, we lost an amazing character actor, Conchita Farrell, best known for playing the housekeeper Berta on 2 and a Half Men. Conchita was 77 years old. She had suffered a heart attack in May and never recovered. She was eventually transferred to a long-term care facility and put on a respirator and dialysis, then a hospice facility, until she passed away on October the 12th. I had the pleasure of talking to her back in May of 2009. That was at the 6-year mark of her role as Berta, halfway into the dozen years that she played that feisty character. Here's part of that conversation now.
Talking to a lot of people today about the show who really, really enjoyed it, and they all use the same word, saucy.
Saucy?
Saucy. And this is without prompting from me.
Well, I think that people tend to call any domestic servant who talks back saucy.
In the role that you play as Berta, how much was on the written page when you first saw the role, and how much of it is Conchita?
Well, first of all, everything in our show is written. We sometimes say things that they like, but everything is written. When I auditioned for the role, I was only supposed to do 2 shows, and they were looking for, I think, something a little more ethnic than me. But they were not quite sure what they wanted to do with her, so they brought in, you know, all the usual suspects, all the character people. So they asked me for a European, Middle Eastern European accent, and I thought, well, you know, I do a fairly decent Russian accent, and I worked it, and then I worked it in my own voice, and I went, I'm going to ask him if I can do it twice, because I do it better in my own voice. And I got there, and there was about 22 women there, and I went, they're never going to listen to it twice. So when I went in, I said, I know you're looking for an ethnic kind of a approach to this role, and I said, but, you know, I come with my own ethnicity, and I think that this works better in Trailer Park. and they laughed and said, whatever makes you happy. And I think one of them actually fell off the couch when I read it. So what they did was they took that Trailer Park thing and ran with it. So that's the contribution that I have made. I brought Trailer Park to Malibu.
Now, many years ago, you were on a sitcom.
Hotel Baltimore.
Hotel Baltimore, yes.
Yes.
A Norman Lear sitcom. And one of the things that was interesting is that Norman Lear had a way of finding people on the stage and bringing the television. Was that the situation with you?
Well, Hot L. Baltimore was a play.
Right, exactly.
And I was in the play. I did April in the play. And I did it, I think, 377 times. Some of Norman's people saw me. And when he came to New York, he came to see it, and so I just sort of went with it. He just brought me out. He would have brought Judd Hirsch, who played the desk clerk, but Judd was already committed to a show called The Law. So, yeah, you know, he found me there.
When You were assigned to do that show, and unfortunately it only lasted, what, 13 episodes?
13 episodes. We were Norman's first failure.
I was about to say, Norman had a great track record, but most of that track record was with CBS.
Yes.
Did you think this was, okay, this is it. This is my ticket.
Yeah. I think probably I did. It was more important to me when I found out that he had bought the play.
Right.
It was more important to me that nobody else knew April. She was given to me as a Christmas present by the playwright.
Really?
Yes. So I felt like she was mine. You know, I created her, I breathed life into her, and it was so important to me that I do it. I don't know if I thought about my ticket, because when I got out here, my dressing room was bigger than any place I'd ever lived.
Another great role that you were known for is you had, 15 episodes on L.A. Law?
I had a year.
A year?
I had a year on L.A. Law, so I guess that would be...
As Susan Bloom?
As Susan Bloom, yes. She was one of my very favorite roles.
Why is that?
Because she had power.
Mm.
And I always like to play a woman who's got something that I'd like to have. It sort of lets you walk a mile on somebody, you know, in a pair of shoes you'd really like to wear.
Right.
And she was richer than God. And and she had power. And it was really fun. She was really fun.
Well, Berta has power. No one messes with that woman.
Berta has enormous power. You know, Berta has absolute confidence in who she is. And she just doesn't worry whether anybody likes her or not. You know, she just is who she is. And I find a great deal of pleasure and enjoyment at the ridiculousness of these rich people.
You know, when, again, going back to the ABC experience, you were on Hot L Baltimore. It didn't work out. It was a Norman Lear show, and everyone thought, well, this is going to take off. So have you had any difficulty handicapping projects you're working on? In other words, when you got 2.5 Men, and again, albeit it was only for 2 episodes, but when you saw it, when you got the script, did you say, oh, this is a hit?
No, I didn't. I mean, it was a wonderful script. They're wonderful writers. But I love the character, and I usually just go, I just approach from the character. And I did know that it was already picked up because, you know, I mean, I didn't do the pilot. I did the first show that they shot, other than the pilot. And it was only supposed to be, like I said, a 2-show arc. But the thing of it is when I did the first show, I came home and I said to my husband, I went, boy, I hope they like me as much as I like them, because I fit here. I don't know why I fit here, but I really fit here. And I ended up doing 8 or 9 shows that first year. But we knew by the third show that it was a hit. I don't think anybody thought about 6 seasons, which we have just finished. But we knew it was a hit. So when they picked me up for the second year and picked me up as a regular on the season, my daughter had longed to go to a really good art school, and we couldn't afford it. And when they picked me up, the first thing I did was call her and say, pick your art school. If they'll take you, I'll give you 4 years, because this show's going to do that.
Excellent. One of the things about the show, despite the fact the show is called 2.5 Men, the thing that's interesting is it does have 2 very, very strong characters from 2 very different stations. Berta as a domestic and the Holland Taylor character as their mom.
Yes, and Melanie as the stalker.
And, of course, Melanie as the stalker.
Yes.
The women are written rather strongly in the show, and sometimes that's not always the case. Especially in a supposedly a guy-centric show.
Definitely a guy-centric show. But remember that Chuck Lorre, who is our executive producer and one of the creators on the show, wrote for and produced Roseanne.
Right.
And Grace Under Fire and Sybil and Darman Gregg.
True.
So he had always done women. I think he just felt it was really time to do boys.
By the way, we had Chuck Lorre on the program a little while back, and I sent him an email today telling him that you were going to be on the show, and he sent me back an email saying, and this is a quote, "You'll love Chatty. She's the best." They call you Chatty?
Chatty, yeah. You know, I'm from West Virginia. And there's a, nobody's quite sure where my mother got the name. Whether she, you know, she had lived in a, she lived in a mining camp when she was younger. Whether she had lived with somebody who had a similar name or whether she read it in a book. But she named me Conchata, or she actually named me Conchata and then Galen. And my father went, oh, my God, and cut it to Chattagale. And then it sort of, like, evolved into Chatty over the years. So it's Chatty. Everybody calls me Chatty.
How does someone who starts off life in West Virginia make it to Hollywood? What was the plan?
Well, nobody'd marry me. Yeah, I mean, where I grew up, that's what you expected somebody to do. And nobody'd marry me, so I had to find something else to do. And I'm one of those people who's, who've done everything. I've, from working in a factory to working in a hotel to teaching history, just kept looking for what it was, and accidentally got into a little show in West Virginia somewhere. I walked on stage and got a laugh, and every pore in my body opened up, and I went, oh, boy, this is it. And I was so stupid, I just packed my bags and went to New York.
Now, packing your bags and going to New York, did you take acting classes while you were there, or
But I also had a stroke of, like, you know, remarkable luck. I went with a friend, and we got a place, and I got a job, a 9-to-5 job, and I knew somebody else who was there, and they took me to this little theater. It was in an attic, and it was just forming. I didn't become a member right away, but I became one of, like, the people who, like, handed out leaflets on the street and that kind of a thing. But this little theater turned out to be Circle Repertory Theater, which was one of the most important theaters in New York during the 70s and 80s and 90s. Off-Broadway, Hot L Baltimore was born there. It was like Lamford Wilson was the resident playwright. I took classes with the theater. And worked 9-to-5 and worked at the theater from about 5:30 until 1 o'clock in the morning. And failed with them and succeeded with them. And in our fifth season, Lanford wrote Hot L for us and put us on the map. And it was history then, because we did about maybe 20 hit shows in New York after that.
Wow.
So it was just a piece of fortune. It really was. I mean, even though I say I was really stupid when all my pores opened up and went, this is it, it really was it.
Did you or do you enjoy stage more than film?
Yes, I like stage very much. But you see, I like sitcom best of all.
Why is that?
It's sort of a combination of the two. I get tired of a play after about 3 to 4 months. You know, you do it 8 shows a week, and I tend to get tired. What we do is we do a 22-minute play a week with the same character, but the circumstances are always different. But I've got that live audience, and I don't have to worry about the camera because it's multi-camera,
right?
And somebody else worries about that. And so all I have to do is come out and commit myself to the character and to the rhythm of the piece, and then the audience is just my best friend. Because, you know, they start to laugh and my pores open up and, you know, and it's like an E-ride, or I don't know if you remember E-rides, but it's like the best ride in the amusement park.
Right. I understand that you guys have a ritual. Charlie Sheen does a fist bump with you guys.
Oh, yeah. You know, before we go out, he comes out, and instead of saying, you know, good luck or all that kind of thing, he comes out and puts his fist out, and we bump fists, and that means, you know, have a good show. And then after the show, if it's really been a good one, he bumps fists again, you know, and it's a good show. And it's just Charlie's way of being the camp leader, you know.
But I also hear he hits hard.
Sometimes. That may depend on what's going on.
You have been nominated for, is it 3 Emmys?
Yeah. For L.A. Law and 2 for 2.5 Men.
What's it like going to the ceremony and sitting in the audience, waiting to hear your name mentioned?
Well, I think the first time you're nominated, the first time is like, you know, you write a speech and you get ready just in case. And I think maybe the second time as well. But now I just go and root for the show. I'm not real good on the red carpet. I'm not a glamorous woman. And they're not really that interested in taking my picture. You know, sometimes they ask me to move along so they can get a picture of somebody coming in behind me.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, one thing about being a character woman and, you know, and looking like I do is you maintain your humility.
After, again, I don't want to keep bringing up Hot L Baltimore. Actually, I do, but anyway. After Hot L Baltimore,
character.
It was a great character. And we should mention you played a hooker in that character. And you said it was written for you. So what was...
He writes specifically for actors. And he doesn't necessarily write who you are. He writes who he'd like to see you do.
Right.
And I have to be honest with you, that character had a lot in common with Berta, except, you know, she was flashier. She didn't care what anybody thought about her. She just assumed people liked her. She's funny as hell. And she was a woman who was just doing the best with what God gave her to work with. I did 377 performances of that character, and when I put her away, she kept a lot. I kept a lot of her. Mm-hmm. I had to find her in me. And so a lot of who I am today came from that character. So she is very dear to me.
The reason why I bring that show up is that you described yourself as a character actor, which is a good thing because character actors tend to get work. I mean, you come out to Hollywood, you're on a sitcom, which only lasts 13 weeks, and a lot of people don't get a second shot. And sadly, a lot of women don't get a second shot, but you managed to keep working.
Yes, I did. But you notice I haven't been the star of one since. But yeah, I did. And I've always been a character woman. So I really haven't had to be too concerned about the fact that I was getting older. You know, that my weight has gone up and down. And I've worked. I'm sort of the blue collar of my industry.
Right.
You know, and that's where I come from. I understand what it is. And I like it. First of all, I like to work. There's very few things I like as much as acting, and particularly comedy. It's just my thing. I just like it.
Have you had periods of time in your career when people or agents or studios tried to change you?
Not studios so much, but I've had agents, you know, beg me to get thin. And, you know, if I could have done it, I would have done it. But no, nobody's really expected me to change much. If I fit with a character, I fit with a character. I've got some work out there that I don't bring up, but I also have some really good stuff out there that made me really happy that I did it and breathed life into those women. I really like the women I play most of the time.
Is there a character or a role that you'd like to play that you haven't had the chance to yet?
Well, I'd really like to do a couple villains. You know, I also do drama, and I would really love to do a villain. I usually play, you know, the hard-bitten heart of gold, and I like that woman. I like her very much, but I would like to explore the villainy in myself.
So what you're saying is you have a dark side?
Yeah, I do. I do, you know. Believe it or not, I've always wanted a shot at Lady Macbeth.
Really?
Yeah, but I still have the Southern accent, so I don't really fit into Shakespeare really well. And I would love to try... Now, this is theater, but I would love to try, like, a Molière or a Noel Coward kind of, you know, that mannered kind of thing.
Right.
This is so opposite of who I am. I'm such a peasant. You know, I mean, Holland is this classy lady, and that's who she is. And you know, and I'm this peasant.
But it's always fun to watch the two of you go toe-to-toe occasionally.
I would really like... Now, that's the one thing I would really like to see. I'd really like to see them throw us at each other in a show. Because it's really hard to figure out who would come out on top.
I also think it'd be really tough for the two boys if those two ladies became friends.
Yes, yes. Yes, there is that.
Well, it's always a joy to watch you on television, regardless of what you might be playing. It certainly is fun watching you as Berta on the television show.
And I have great writers.
Yes, you do. And it's congratulations on the fact that you'll continue to put your daughter through Yale.
Thank you.
For at least, and you'll be doing this for at least another 3 years.
Yeah, well, she should finish up next year. So, you know, I might even be able to save a little money.
There you go.
There you go.
You know, put an addition on the house or something.
Yeah.
Conchita, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you.
So it's been a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
That's part of a conversation I had with Conchita Farrell, who managed to play Berta for another 6 years after we spoke in May of 2009. Conchita passed away on October the 12th at the age of 77. She always played tough, ballsy broads, but everybody who worked with her and everyone who had a chance to talk with her always said what a down-to-earth, lovely woman she was. I can concur. She will be missed. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to one of our favorite guests on the show, actress Dee Wallace, who gave me a call this week and wanted to talk about a film she made during quarantine, a horror flick in her house called Stay Home, so that's what we'll talk about. And from WeirdHistorian.com, Mark Hartzman is back with the odd news story of October, historically speaking. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, so let's get right to it. And here's something else that might keep you up at night. As many as 9 million wild pigs are roaming the United States, expanding from 17 states to at least 39 states over the last 30 years and causing $2.5 billion of damage each year to crops and domestic livestock. According to Dale Nolte, manager of the National Feral Swine Damage Management Program at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and boy, I'd like to see his business card, he went on to say many of the feral swine are hybrids, a mixture of domestic breeds and wild boars called super pigs that multiply so fast, I've heard it referred to as a feral swine bomb. In the U.S. and Canada, government organizations are working to control the numbers. Montana has been especially vigilant, with a 24-hour hotline for residents to call when they see the animals. Do the folks at Hormel, the makers of Spam, know about this? Just asking for a friend. And speaking of Hormel, that divine visionary company, they're offering fans of Breakfast Meats the chance to enjoy the scent of sizzling pork anytime they want with a bacon-scented face mask. Hormel said the black label breathable bacon mask uses the latest in bacon smell technology. And you know, when it comes to bacon smell technology, you always want the latest. Yes, bacon smell technology to give the wearer the experience of smelling bacon anytime they don the COVID-19 protection accessory. Bacon fans can register to win a bacon-scented mask until October 28th at breathablebacon.com. Alas, I live in Canada, so I cannot enter. Woe is me. Says the website, Hormel Black Label Breathable Bacon is bacon-scented for an irresistibly breathable, heavenly aroma that you can keep all to yourself. Hormel said the company will donate one meal to Feeding America for every contest entry up to 10,000. Oh, there is a God. And finally, the Netherlands is home to a new trend in wellness therapy that promises serenity to those who try it. Cow hugging. The BBC reported that a cow's warmer body temperature and slower heartbeat are thought to increase oxytocin levels in humans, reducing stress and promoting positivity. The practice began more than a decade ago, and now farms in Switzerland and the U.S., along with the Netherlands, offer cow cuddling sessions, which typically begin with a tour of the farm before participants are invited to rest against a cow for up to 3 hours. Wow. If you spend 3 hours rubbing up against a cow, there better be dinner and dancing first. By the way, if you go to the Stuff File Program fan page on Facebook, you'll see a 4-minute BBC video on this phenomenon. I had a whole bunch of puns that I was going to throw out here, but I've quietly decided not to milk this for what it's worth. So let's just get to our next guest, shall we? Actress Dee Wallace is back on the show. The heralded Scream Queen has a new project out that was made during the pandemic and is pandemic-related. It's a short horror film called Stay Home. Dee joins us via Skype from her home in California. Hi, Dee.
Hi. How are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us once again.
Tickety-boo, I'm going to steal that.
One of the things that a lot of people are aware of is the fact that with this pandemic, some of the things like sports and entertainment has been curtailed. And one often thinks of themselves as to what they enjoy watching and participating in without giving a lot of thought to those people who make such entertainment. And your industry has been hit really hard. How has your quarantine been?
Oh, well, if I didn't have my other business going, I would be a little crazy. Of course, you know, I've had offers, I've had opportunities, but I just didn't think it was safe, considering all the travel and where I would have to be going. But everything has been incredibly limited for us. And that's why, you know, I just was sitting here in my office one day and I went, all right, what can I create? And I came up with this idea for this short film, and I took it to my daughter, and she and her friend ran with it and wrote a great script. And four of my horror icons and I got together. We each did it in our own homes, miraculously, way far away from each other. And I just wanted to give back to the fans and stay connected during this crazy time.
I saw a little bit of it. I watched it. Again, it's a short film. And all I kept thinking when I was watching it is, it reminded me of when, for those who've ever acted, for those who've ever wanted to direct, for those who've ever wanted to be in show business, going back to the very beginning when you just got together and played. Did it give you that feeling when you were doing this?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we all loved about it, I think, was we didn't need an excuse to work for less or work for nothing or just come together to have fun. Sometimes your agents don't want you to do that, but they didn't really care during the pandemic. And it was kind of like, let's put on a show. And everybody brought in their best ideas and we just had a ball. And the fans are absolutely loving it on YouTube right now.
Now, tell us a little bit about the story.
Well, it's a whole takeoff on stay home. You have to stay home to be safe. Well, none of these people, none of us, because we stayed home, are safe. And, the tagline at the end is, I'm so glad you stayed home. So I don't want to give out away any more than that. it's just a lot of fun and not meant to be taken too seriously, although we've already got people asking us if we would be interested in maybe making it a feature film now. So, you know, you just have to go out and create and have fun, and then it finds its own way in the world, kind of like, you know, build it and they will come.
Were you surprised by the amount of people who agreed, who said, yes, I'm in?
I wasn't really. I do the conventions, and I've obviously done films with all these people. So, you know, we're friends, and nobody's too full of themselves. Nobody's got an ego that's got a... you know, express their self-worth in a monetary way. So no, I wasn't really surprised. And if any of them had not gotten on board, there were lots of other people I could have taken it to.
Which brings me to the question, now that you've put this out there and people seem to like it, does that make you want to do more and reach out to the other people you didn't get around to because everyone already said yes?
I don't have any plans to do another one right now. If I did another short film, I think I would want it to be a different genre and a different statement. You know, I've got this whole other side of my life where I'm a clairaudient channel and I do a lot of healing work. So maybe if I could do something with that in terms of a drama, so it's more of a relationship film, I might think about that. But things are starting to open up now, Peter. And like, I've got a call back for a commercial tomorrow, and I did have a beautiful audition for a series that, but it shoots in New Orleans, and I'm not going to New Orleans right now. That's the last place in America I'd want to go right now. So, you know, there's just a lot of things that go into the decisions that you make. And right now, safety is one of the priorities for me and my family.
Absolutely. Speaking of family, you mentioned your daughter. Your daughter, Gabrielle Stone, she co-directed this film. Tell us some of the other people that you work with. And again, since you're all friends, was it just great, even at a distance, to be able to work with them?
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, we were on the phone all the time and interacting verbally all the time. Gabrielle and Chris Heck co-wrote it and co-directed it. And, you know, Barbara Crampton and I have worked together. Scout Taylor Compton has played my daughter in Halloween. She and Danielle and I worked together in Halloween. And Kanan Hodder and I do about 50% of all the conventions I do. He's there. So We're all friends, and, you know, it started out with, well, Dee, send us your idea, send us the script. And so we did, and everybody loved it, and they could shoot it in a day at their own home. And everybody just thought it was a great idea to give back to the fans, you know.
You mentioned Danielle. I just want to get the full name out there. Danielle Harris is the person you were referring to that you've worked with on a lot of occasions. So how can people... You mentioned YouTube. It debuted on Bloody Disgusting. But how can people see it? Where's the best way to find it?
Well, you can go to YouTube or you can go to Bloody Disgusting. They've got a link there. They also have... We've got a little competition going on because there's a lot of Easter eggs hidden in all of the segments. And, you know, whomever finds the most Easter eggs. We've got a little competition going on there. Bloody Disgusting will also be releasing it on their Roku deal with Roku. But right now, I just, I would check out their site. They've got the link to get you there or look it up on YouTube.
Excellent. Dee, always a pleasure to have you on the program. You are one of the busiest people I've ever come across, so I'm glad you took the time to be on the show with us. And above all, stay safe.
Yeah, and stay home. Thanks, Peter. Always a joy.
Actress Dee Wallace. You know, she's always a ray of sunshine and a delight to talk to. The film is called Stay Home. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the page for this show, which is show number 0583, and you'll find links to Dee's website and also where you can find the film. And I've also put a link on Twitter and on the Stuff File Facebook fan page. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk weird history, plus there's an idiot of the day, but I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you here on a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And you know, we all need a feel-good story, so here's the one for today. Brittany Reed pulled into a Waynesville, Ohio McDonald's with three crying kids in the back of her van. When she pulled up to the window to pay, she realized she left her purse at home. "I looked at the young man with tears in my eyes just from being stressed and annoyed," Reed posted on Facebook. "And I say, hun, I am so sorry, but I have to cancel that order. I left my purse at home when we went to football tonight." The cashier, Wyatt, quickly swiped his own card to pay for her order. He made this stressed-out mama pause for a moment and realize this is exactly what we parents are trying to do, raise great humans, Reed said. She went on to say, "Well, Wyatt, sir, you are an amazing human." When she returned to pay him back, he refused to take her money. She found out Wyatt was working to save up for a car, so she started a GoFundMe Be Like Wyatt page to help raise the $5,000 he needed. It didn't just hit the goal. It may be enough to pay for college, too. Yeah, that's because there are a lot of amazing humans in this world, not just Wyatt. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Mark Hartzman, author of The Big Book of Mars and the curator of the website WeirdHistorian.com, is back for his monthly visit featuring a weird moment in history from the current month. So, to look at October, Mark joins us once again via Skype from New York. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. So I understand an inventor is actually in the forecast for this month.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Thomas Edison, pretty well-known guy.
Yeah.
And this was a story that took place 100 years ago, October of 1920.
This is a story that is kind of fittingly apropos for Halloween.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it'd be good. It's the time that Thomas Edison tried to talk to the dead.
Is there a particular reason why he wanted to do this?
Well, you know, there were a few forces kind of going on around that time that I think kind of led to this story happening. So first of all, you had a lot of technology going on, right? In the late 1800s, early 1900s, Edison, of course, developed the phonograph in the late 1870s. Then you had, you know, the invention of the telephone. You have the invention of the x-rays, the radio, you know, wireless telegraphs. So you have all these kind of like invisible forces, you know, these invisible technologies, things that never seemed possible before are suddenly possible. And it's very magical. So you have that going on. And then you have spiritualism going on. So around the same time, you have all this belief that mediums can contact the dead. You have people holding seances. They're having tables levitate. There's wrappings on doors and tables, Ouija boards. There's all kinds of ways that these mediums and psychics are trying to communicate with lost loved ones. And then, of course, you have World War I. You have the Spanish flu of 1918. And so you have a lot of loss of life going on. And so you have people who are really interested in trying to contact their lost loved ones because there were just so many. So you have that sort of bereavement and mourning kind of leading into a heightened spiritualism. So when you combine like all this technology and the desire to talk to the dead, you have someone like Thomas Edison say like, well, you know, maybe this is a project I could work on.
Was this something that he wholeheartedly believed in, or was this just a theory from which to work on something? How invested in this was he?
Well, so that's a good question, and there's certainly debate about it. So when he announced this, he made this announcement in October of 1920, and his thought was, you know, first of all, there was, I think, some excitement around the announcement that he would do this. In fact, I'm just going to read really quick, I love the headline from one of the newspapers that says, Edison at work on machine to talk with dead. Inventor hopes to perfect his apparatus within a few months. Believes idea will be success. Methods commonly used. Unscientific nonsense, wizard says. And so when people are reading this, they're thinking like, well, if this guy could make a phonograph, you know, maybe he could make a telephone to the afterlife too.
You know, that sounds very much like a current day headline, by the way. I'm just telling you right now. It has a ring to it that sounds very familiar.
Some things don't change too much, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, Edison thought, you know, okay, if we're going to talk to the dead, why would the dead go through all these like ridiculous methods? Why would he reach out through planchettes and ectoplasm and levitation of tables? He thought if this is going to happen, there's going to be a scientific way to do it. So he thought if someone's in the afterlife, they're not going to do these, what he called prankish and primitive methods of communication. So he said, you know, he thought that he could develop some kind of technology, some sort of what he called a super delicate communication device, something he says finally responsive as human ingenuity could make it. So he seemed to be genuine in this interview, describing the type of machinery he would have to create to make it. Now, of course, like you said, some people question like, okay, is Edison just joking with us? Maybe he was just, you know, grabbing some headlines and kind of having fun with the spiritualism craze. And that may very well have been. But there was a report later in 1933 in a magazine called Modern Mechanics, where it talked about a secret demonstration that he had done, that Edison had done in his laboratory with several other scientists present. And it talked about him kind of setting up this experiment to try to get some sort of communication to come through. And, you know, of course, nothing did. So there was that aspect. And then he also talked with the New York Times later in 1920, just shortly after this particular article. And he talked about his belief on what constitutes life. And he had this belief that the human body is composed of what he called life units, which were like infinitely small. He thought there were 100 trillion of them in the human body. And like energy, you know, it can't be created or wasted. It's just, you know, it just transforms. So he thought that once you passed on, your life units moved out and they went into something else. So he thought you can't create life, you can't destroy life, you can't multiply life. It just sort of transitions. So he had these interesting beliefs about life and how that worked. He had this, obviously, this great knowledge of technology and this inventiveness. So he seemed like, you know, maybe there was something to this actual thought. And then later, there was a posthumously published book called The Diary and Sundry Observations of Thomas Alva Edison. And he talked a bit more on his ideas of life and the idea that maybe human life is alien in origin. He said, I cannot believe for a moment that life in the first instance originated on this insignificant little ball, which we call Earth, little that is in contrast with other bodies which inhabit space. So, you know, he had this thought that, you know, maybe we came from another planet to begin with. Mm. So you have all these sort of swirling thoughts and theories and philosophies. So maybe it was a joke, but hey, maybe there was something to it. Maybe he wanted to have a little bit of air of mystery around it as well.
Okay, so we can go on the assumption that even if he tried to talk to the dead, that he was not successful. Let's just put that out there right now.
Yes, we can definitely all agree on that.
Okay, but since we know he was trying to do this, we're not quite sure how far he may have gotten in his theories and or experiments, correct?
Yes. I mean, there's not a whole lot of specificity on exactly how far the machine got. I think there have been talks, maybe in that article, of some plans that were drawn up and people trying to recreate this machine. But again, like you said, obviously no one has succeeded. Not to say that people aren't still trying. I mean, there have been experiments over the years where people have tried making machines that could speak to the dead. I mean, up till there's one being worked on now called the Spirit Phone, or the Soul Phone, I believe. So these thoughts, you know, this desire to communicate with the afterlife has never gone away. And as technology keeps improving, people will keep trying. Who knows? You know,
well,
huge if it happened. Not yet.
Based on the idea that, at least in his mind, he may have had a modicum of success. He didn't get to the end point where he wanted to reach, but he felt maybe that he was getting somewhere in his experiments. In keeping with the month of October, it should be noted that Edison himself died in October of 1931. I'm wondering if he's trying to reach back from the other side.
Well, that would be certainly exciting. It'd be amazing to hear from someone like him and what he's invented in the other, you know, on the other side in the afterlife. I'm sure that people will be fascinated to hear from him. But yeah, but nothing so far. Maybe if one of these, you know, if this soul phone thing works out, we can talk to him.
I envision it something like the way engineers and builders build either railroads or bridges. They usually start from both ends and work toward the middle.
Yeah. So
maybe that's what he's doing.
It could be. It'll certainly be fun to, you know, see if anything like this ever works out. There, I mean, when people work on these technologies too, they refer back to his Spirit Phone. You know, they say, okay, I've figured out Edison's Spirit Phone with my new technology, you know, which of course those don't work either, even though they might claim that they do. Because you'll have people who claim that their technologies work, you know, various psychics, mediums who will say that they've spoken with the dead, but you know, these things are always questionable. Maybe they have. It's possible, but certainly nothing that's been widely accepted. Otherwise, we'd all know about it by now.
He might work his way back, if only to file a suit for claim of a patent infringement, which is something he was familiar in doing in life.
That would be an amazing first communication to come back. Just shut the whole thing down.
Mark, it's a fascinating story. It's a great story for the month of October. I can't wait to hear what you come up with for November. I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Always happy to do it. Thanks so much.
Mark Hartzman, author of The Big Book of Mars. His website is weirdhistorian.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is number 0583, and you'll find links to Mark's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Tennessee rapper who boasted in a music video about getting rich from committing unemployment fraud was arrested in Los Angeles. 31-year-old Fontrell Antonio Baines, who goes by the stage name Nuke Bizzle, was arrested on 3 felony counts and faces up to 22 years in federal prison. Feds say Baines and his co-conspirators fraudulently obtained at least 92 debit cards preloaded with more than $1.2 million. The unemployment debit cards were issued in the names of third parties, including identity theft victims. The cards were sent to addresses to which Baines had access in Beverly Hills and the Koreatown neighborhood of Los Angeles. Las Vegas police arrested Baines on September 23rd while he had 8 debit cards in his possession, 7 of which were in the names of other people. In Instagram posts, the rapper bragged extensively about his ability to defraud California's Employment Development Department. He also posted a music video on YouTube, which had amassed more than 400,000 views, in which he boasts about, quote, getting rich off EDD, unemployment so sweet. We had 1.5 land this week. You gotta sell cocaine, but I just file a claim. Yeah, sweet rhymes. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're supposedly smart enough to be part of a fraud ring that is stealing millions from the government, would you then rap about it in Instagram and YouTube videos? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0583. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0583. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, or you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Well, you weren't literally with him. Well, maybe you were, but I don't see how. I mean, he does record these in advance, you know, and okay, maybe you did listen with him. Who am I to call you a liar? And personally, I've never met the guy, and I'm not in a hurry to either.